We're going to talk about Jerusalem in the Old Testament. And what I hope to do in this session is to look at just a few key highlights in the Old Testament, which just show to us something about the significance of the city of Jerusalem. And I'm conscious what I'm actually doing in these first two sessions is, I know it's very biblical. We haven't yet got into what's going on today and all the rest of it. But I really wanted just to lay the biblical foundations before we move into looking at history and law. And I believe it's really important we get an understanding of the centrality of Jerusalem in God's eternal kingdom purposes. That's basically it. And it obviously begins with Israel and the Jewish people. And then in the 2,000 years of the dispensation, as it were, of the Gentiles, Jerusalem plays a lesser role. And now at the end of this time when God is restoring things, Israel becomes much more central, also because Israel and the Jewish people are being restored. So I think if we look at the Old Testament, and I've got just six items I want to share with you. And the first of them is this remarkable story about Abraham who meets the king of Salem. And you'll recall Abraham's gone on his journey from Babylon all the way with his family through Haran and then down into Canaan. And he's going to the place that God promised he would bring him to. And as he goes, God reveals step by step where he wants him to be. But he doesn't yet realize the significance of the place that he's in. He doesn't know yet that this is the place where God is going to establish his people, Israel. He's just being faithful to the Lord and going this journey from the north down to the south, and he goes down to Beersheba, and he comes back up from Beersheba to a place. And of course, in the meantime, there's been this tremendous battles, and he's had to go out and save his nephew Lot from the kings who've kidnapped them and taken them up towards Damascus, and he goes after them and he destroys these kings. And then he comes back from there, having won that victory. And he comes back to this place. He doesn't probably quite know where he is. And then we read in Genesis 14, verse 18. So let's start at verse 17. Of Genesis, after Abram returned from defeating Chedorlaomer and the kings allied with him, the king of Sodom came out to meet him in the valley of Shaveh, that is the king's valley. And then we get this passage, then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was priest of God Most High, and he blessed Abram, saying, "Blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth. And blessed be God Most High who delivered your enemies into your hand." Abram gave him then a tenth of everything. This is a really strange story. This guy appears out of nowhere. He's the king of this place called Salem, and he's also a priest of the Most High, and somehow Abraham sees in him, through the blessing that he gives Abraham, that this is a priest of the Most High. And we read in the book of Hebrews that Jesus, of course, has priesthood after the order of Melchizedek, not Levi, but of Melchizedek. We don't know where Melchizedek comes from, but it is a higher order of priesthood than even the Levites had under the law. And even the Levites in because Abraham is the father of the grandfather of Jacob and therefore of great-grandfather of Levi and the priesthood of Levi. Even the Levites brought their tenth, their tithes, they gave to Melchizedek. So the book of Hebrews tells us it was a prophetic reference, as it were, even a reference to the future kingdom of the kingship of Jesus Christ, and the fact that even the Levites under the law were bringing their tithes to a greater priesthood, and that would become, of course, Jesus Christ. It's remarkable that he comes with bread and wine. Of course, this is very symbolic, isn't it? A prophetic of the future time that Jesus would share the bread and the wine, the body and the blood. This, of course, takes place in Salem. He is the king of Salem, which is later Jerusalem, the city of peace. It is also the notion of provision. It is the place where God provides. And it's very important that Melchizedek is providing for Abraham. He's blessing him. He says, I give you everything you need. This is very comforting for Abraham, of course, at that time. Abraham has no idea what really the Lord is doing. He's just walking with the Lord. He knows there's this promise that through you I'll make a nation, your nation will be a blessing to the nations, but he has no idea yet really how the Lord is going to do that. And then this priest, the king and the priest of the Most High, he recognizes to be the God, priest of the God who called him and spoke to him when he was in Babylon. He says, so God is saying to him, as it were, I am in control. I am giving you all you need to go on your journey and to be who I want you to be. And it is in Jerusalem that this happens. A beautiful story. Of course, this is also the place where later Abraham, having received his miraculous son Isaac, of course, before that we have the story of Ishmael. This is the lesson again that Abraham has to learn, that it is through God's provision that he will receive the covenant and his nation will be built. God had promised a child. Of course, Sarah and Abraham were too old. So Abraham thinks, well, I know, I have a good idea. Well, Sarah says, why don't you sleep with Hagar, my servant, and she will have a child. It will be your child. And then God's will be fulfilled. So he does that, and Ishmael is born. And of course, he's the child of Hagar, and he goes into the desert, and God says, I will bless Ishmael. He will also be the father of many nations, and he will be wealthy. But my covenant is with the promised one, whom you will receive, and that is, of course, Isaac. And God says, my covenant is with Isaac and Jacob. And then we have this remarkable story where God says, take your son Isaac, whom he's given to him miraculously, take him and sacrifice him. And Abraham takes Isaac and begins to perform the ritual of sacrifice on Mount Moriah, the place where Melchizedek had appeared to Abraham, the place where the temple would be, the place where Jesus Christ came and where he will come again. And that is the place where again God provides. And God does this miraculous thing and provides. He says, now I know you're ready to give up even your own son. Stop. I will provide the sacrifice. But the lesson that Abraham has had to learn is that he has to give up everything that's important to him, even his own son. And of course, we know how important, how prophetic that message is, that God the Father gave his very only son, was willing to sacrifice his only son in order that the nations would be blessed. A wonderful story. Again, it is Jerusalem, Mount Moriah. Later, we have the kingship of David, who was anointed under Samuel. And David, of course, establishes himself in Hebron, but goes up to defeat the Jebusites who are living in Jerusalem. And we have the remarkable story in 2 Samuel 24, where David is punished by the Lord. He's punished by the Lord. And then he's asked, let's read it from 2 Samuel 24. Verse 1, again the anger of the Lord was burned against Israel, and he incited David against them, saying, go and take a census of Israel and Judah, which is what David does. And then later on in verse 11, before David got up the next morning, the word of the Lord had come to God, the prophet David's seer, go and tell David, this is what the Lord said. I am giving you three options. Choose one of them for me to carry out against you. So then David says, well, then I don't want the plague. David says to the prophet, I'm in deep distress. Let us fall into the hands of the Lord, for his mercy is great. But let me not fall into the hands of men. So he chooses for the plague on Israel. And then God sent a plague on Israel from that morning until the end of the time that was designated, and 70,000 of the people from Dan to Beersheba died. When the angel stretched out his hand to destroy Jerusalem, the Lord was grieved because of the calamity and said to the angel who was afflicting the people, enough, withdraw your hand. The angel of the Lord was then at the threshing floor of Arauna the Jebusite. And when David saw the angel who was striking down the people, he said to the Lord, I am the one who has sinned and done wrong. These are but sheep. What have they done? Let your hand fall upon me and upon my family. And he builds an altar to the Lord. So David went up as the Lord had commanded, and he purchases the threshing floor of Arauna. He bought the threshing floor and the oxen, and he paid 50 shekels of silver for them. David built an altar to the Lord there and sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings. Then the Lord answered prayer on behalf of the land, and the plague on Israel was stopped. So here we have it again on Mount Moriah, Mount Zion, where the Jebusites were living, and they continued to live, that David purchases the threshing floor and pays 50 shekels for it. And that's God's amazing thing, isn't it? He's paid for this bit of land. And I believe that the Lord has purchased the Temple Mount, and he owns the Temple Mount. And he will reestablish the Temple Mount and Mount Zion to his glory in the fulfillment of his time. But it happened there under David that the Lord physically purchased this little bit of real estate. And of course, it was later the place where the temple was built by his son Solomon. David was unable to build the temple because of the blood on his hands. And God said, it will be your son who will build the temple. And he builds it on Mount Moriah, that place where Abraham was required to sacrifice his son. And this is the place where the sacrifices would be brought. And it's the place where the full sacrifice of Jesus is brought even later. So Jerusalem is the dwelling place of the Lord in the temple. The temple that was built by Solomon, destroyed under Nebuchadnezzar, rebuilt later under Zerubbabel when the remnant returned from Babylon, and the walls were rebuilt, the temple was rebuilt, and under Ezra, the law was restored, and the people were restored. Destroyed by the Romans on the 9th of Av, 70 years of the Christian era, 70 years AD. It's 40 years after the death of Jesus, the temple is destroyed. And of course, it's the place where there's the wonderful vision of Ezekiel, chapter 40, of another temple that may or will be built. And we don't know exactly where that temple will be, but it is a vision of the temple where there will be a dwelling place of the Lord again in Jerusalem. I don't believe it will be a place where the sacrifices are brought, because the sacrifice has been paid. And the Jewish people and Israel and the nations have, the sacrifice has been paid for them. But it will be a dwelling place of the Lord. And it may have something to do with the Antichrist, as we will look at later, who will seek to establish himself, perhaps in the temple in Jerusalem, to take the place of the Lord. But Jerusalem will remain central to the Lord's purposes in the Messianic kingdom. Moving on to the kings of the earth, the visions given to Daniel, when Daniel is in Babylon and he's seeking the Lord, and the Lord reveals to him there would be a time of the nations, a time of the kingdoms of nations before the Messiah would come. And later in Daniel chapter 9, when he's interceding on behalf of Jerusalem, again, the Lord reveals to him about the time of the Antichrist. But there would be these four kingdoms, and those four kingdoms would ultimately be crushed by the coming of Messiah, who will destroy the fourth kingdom, which is the fulfillment of all four kingdoms, that is the end of the Roman Empire. So very briefly, you know, from Daniel's time, we have the Babylonian kingdom. Then they are succeeded by the Medes and Persians, who are succeeded by the Greeks, who are then succeeded by the Romans. And the Roman Empire is that last empire that is represented by the legs of this statue, which is divided into two. And then the legs have feet, and the feet have 10 toes. And the feet are made of clay and iron, which don't mix. And then the Lord reveals more about these 10, which will be 10 kingdoms. And the Lord reveals more about those 10 kingdoms later in the book of Revelation. So there will be a time of 10 kings at the end of the Roman Empire. And I think we are living at the end of the time of the Roman Empire. The European Union is a manifestation, in a way, of the continuation of the Roman Empire. And in fact, all of these four empires together, coming together. And the vision given to Daniel is the statue will be crushed by the coming of the great stone, which is the coming of Messiah. And of course, Jerusalem is referred to also as the stone of contention, the stone which will crush. So somehow Jerusalem is so closely connected with the coming of Messiah that will crush and destroy the kingdoms of the earth to usher in God's kingdom under the Messiah. So again, Jerusalem is again very important in the fulfillment of this prophetic words given to Daniel, and that are even further explored and revealed in the New Testament. And I believe we are living in that time when we're seeing the manifestation of these 10 kings. I don't know exactly how it will play out, but somehow there will be 10 kings, and it speaks of seven crowns and horns. We can't go into the details, and I'm looking at Hugh Kitchen for the moment and others who know much more about it to dig into this area. But the point here now is just that Jerusalem will be part of that end time fulfillment, the coming of Messiah to destroy this Tower of Babel, which again the nations are building at the end of the time of the Gentiles. Finally, let's just look at the promised land. God promises to Abraham a land, and there are many references to it in the Bible, the description of the land that Israel will have. It has never had in its fullness, even under the kingship of David and Solomon in their fullness, did not have possession of the full promised land that has been promised to the nation of Israel. And it is really from the Mediterranean Sea to the Euphrates. And we can see here that it potentially covers so much of the Middle East. And what we see today in Israel is but just a small portion of it. And again, there are differences in the descriptions of the promised land, where it exactly will be. But it seems to be that the restored Israel, when it is physically fully restored and taking its place as first among the nations in the Messianic kingdom, will occupy, not alone, with other peoples as part of that kingdom, but it will be a large kingdom which will embrace many of the nations of the Middle East today, including Syria, which we see undergoing so much torment and tragedy at the moment. So this is something we can carry with us, and Jerusalem will be the capital of this restored Israel, having its place as first amongst the nations when the Messiah has come again to take his place as king over the nations. So that's what I want to leave you with at the end of this session. Again, just to emphasize how Jerusalem plays such a central role in God's plan through Abraham and the judges and the prophets and the kings of Israel. So when Jesus is speaking about the kingdom with his disciples, and we'll look in a moment at Jesus' relationship with Jerusalem, of course he's speaking also about God's prophetic plans with his people and the land and what will happen in the future. Thank you.